Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more.
Hope is not enough to keep people alive on the battlefield, and it's certainly not enough to keep deals alive in the battlefield of business. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about removing hope from sales outreach meetings and conversion. He was a combat correspondent in the U.S. Marine Corps, deployed to multiple combat tours, embedded with the highest performing teals on the planet, studying how they were able to be bulletproof. He's a nationally syndicated columnist with the Business Journals and author of 3 books, including recent release, Bulletproof Selling, Systematizing Sales for the Battlefield of Business. He's a TEDx speaker, he's an international sales expert, and we are so excited to have him on the podcast. Sean Rhodes, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thanks, sir. I'm excited to get going.
So let's start kind of from the top, from the overarching idea here. Why do so many salespeople rely on hope?
There's 2 reasons we found, sir, and I get to interview salespeople as part of the work that I do. We've been able to address about 18,000 of them in the last couple of years and just ask them, hey, you know, where do you feel like you could use more help? And no matter what they tell me, whether it's in closing more deals or driving more meetings or getting better margins on their deals that they are closing, it all comes back down to, Sean, we wish that we had a way that really worked predictably. And in the world of sales, we find every prospect is different. Every phone call, we don't know what's going to happen. We're entering these calls every single day in these meetings every single day that we can't predict. But if we don't have something that help guides us, then we're flying by the seat of our pants every single time. And as you mentioned in my introduction, the work that I did with these high performing teams in combat, they never flew by the seat of their pants because they knew that's not the way to get, you know, your actual ride home, right? Not in the way that you want to go. So they had to develop systems. They had to develop processes that were made to actually change once they were interacting on their missions with the people that they were going to be conducting them with. We found that when we began structuring that type of thing for salespeople, it allowed them to take a lot of the pressure off of themselves with systems and allowed them to be more present and innovate more during their sales meetings.
Amazing. And to kind of dig in more into why relying on hope is not the best way to go, what do you see as kind of the negative impacts on the sales cycle as a whole, those conversations when a salesperson is flying by the seat of their pants, as you say?
Well, there's negative impact to both their organization, to the team that they're on, and to the individual salesperson. The negative impact to the organization is that a lot of salespeople are put into this sink or swim kind of a situation, where whether you have a small sales team, maybe a sales team of one, or whether you're one of 10,000, often salespeople are hired and they say, this is what you're selling, here's who you're selling it to, see if you can make it work. And those that do, they're the ones that figure out how to swim, but the rest of them sink, which is why there's such a high attrition rate, such high turnover of salespeople. So that's the negative impact of the organization. Negative impact to the team is that if you have a team of salespeople that are all relying on hope to do what they do, some of the symptoms are that is you have a couple of high performers and everybody else just struggling to keep up. Well, the high performers, often people think that they're born salespeople. They have a secret sauce. They're magical. They've gotten sprinkled with pixie dust. Something has happened to allow them to have that kind of performance. And we know that's just not the case. Studying these salespeople and actually going out on sales calls with them, they're all following processes, even if those processes are just in their heads. And the final thing that really impacts an individual when they rely on hope too much is they can't predict what's going to happen next in how many calls they're going to make, what their revenue is going to be this month, what their commissions are going to be. And that means whether they're working for an organization or whether they're working for themselves, they end up in this feast or famine revenue cycle where they get a lot of sales at a certain time of the year, and then it's just dry and dead for the rest of the time. And they have to figure out either how do we make more sales during the downtime, or how do I make that large chunk of cash I get during my good quarter last me the rest of the year. Neither of those are positions that you want to be in. The best salespeople are trying to figure out, how do we make that a little more steady? How do we make it a little more predictable, in the language that I know your listeners would catch on to?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want us to walk the audience through how to remove that hope from the equation and create these systems that you're talking about. And I think there's two perspectives here. There's the kind of strategic level from the leadership perspective, and then there's, of course, that tactical perspective from the salesperson's point of view. So I'd like to start with the strategic. How do we implement these types of systems from a leadership perspective?
Well, let's talk about what it means to be bulletproof as it applies to the field of sales. That might help. Now, for the folks that are going to be catching this on the audio, I'm going to show Sarah something on our shared screen, but I'm going to describe it really, really well. So what I'm showing Sarah is actual Marines getting ready to clear a house. This is something that I got to see on multiple combat tours hundreds and hundreds of times. Now, what we don't realize about troops that are getting ready to clear houses or SWAT team members, and I know you have a great police force up there in Canada as well, Sarah, is that these folks are in the world of sales. They have conversion rates, they have pipelines to track, they have all the same things that salespeople do, plus they're operating in a very stressful environment where they don't know what's going to happen next. But as I followed these teams around multiple tours, we realized that these folks were bulletproof. They were able to almost with a premonition know who was going to be around what corner, where to point their rifles so they didn't hurt any of their fellow team members, a lot of different things that they were doing in order to find success. And we began to realize they weren't bulletproof because they were hit by a comet or they had, you know, picked up a spider bite from some radioactive spider. No, they were actually bulletproof because of all of the times their predecessors hadn't been. Mm-hmm. See, after every single mission, no matter what the nationality of these troops were, and I got to work with Canadian forces as well, they would always do a debrief after their sales meetings, after their missions. And they would figure out what went right, what went wrong, and how do we make this better in the future if we had to do it over again? And out of that, they don't just write it down on a sheet of paper and file it in a cabinet somewhere. They take action on it. And when we began to apply that into the world of sales, we realized that, hey, salespeople, if they take the time to assess how they could get better next time, instead of just wiping their brow and saying, wow, glad that call went the way it did, or man, another one, you know, bites the dust, couldn't get that deal closed, because that's what most salespeople do after their meetings. But if you do something a little more than that to begin to improve, even if it's slowly, then you can become bulletproof as well. And that's how it operates from that strategy level. I'm happy to dive into how that works in any particular industry, but I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, I think that's great kind of context and a good visualization of what the system is helping you achieve. It totally makes sense. I think a lot of people, as you're saying, just do the sales call, leave it at that, go do the next one, and probably don't really learn anything from the one prior. So right. If we're thinking about a sales team, we'll say it's a sales team that has the SDR and the AE, you know, separate, because a lot of our audience has a team like that. As a leader, what sorts of, I guess, encouragement can you give? What can you enable your team with in order to be able to take these steps?
So I would say first, enable them with some basic systems. And what a system does is it allows your salespeople to know predictably, I do these things in this order, knowing that my prospect is going to give me something that's not part of my system, right? You'll never be able to operate, you know, like you would on a manufacturing line. It just doesn't work like that in sales. But it doesn't mean that you still can't walk in with a plan. There's a saying that I've learned long before the military, and that is if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. So many salespeople don't have a plan when they walk in, except for this call comes up, I've got to make that call. And or if you're an account executive, my salespeople are doing that and trying to get these accounts over to me. And so if you think about what you can do as a leader, the first basic system I encourage all leaders do is to get your folks into a good CRM. And there are hundreds out there. You're probably using one already. What a lot of salespeople and sales leaders don't do once they have that CRM in place is begin to build ways to take the stress off of their salespeople to know who I'm supposed to reach out to next and what I'm supposed to say when I do. So if you think about a house being built, it's a great analogy. If you were to walk on a construction site today and houses may be going up at a different season where you are, Sarah, than where they are down here in Florida. But when you're working on a construction site, they lay the foundation down and then they put the pipes in for the plumbing. If you think about seeing those pipes in, if you were to imagine a bunch of plumbing pipes on a foundation with no outlet, there's no drains, there's no sinks. I mean, once the water enters, it just circulates potentially forever inside these pipes. These are what really great organizations are doing at a strategic level to give their salespeople the tools that they need to just be present in their conversations. Most salespeople spend 80% of their energy trying to figure out who am I supposed to talk to next? What did we say last time we were on the phone if we had a previous conversation? And what do I say next to get them deeper into the sales cycle or deeper to the sale? Well, if we think of this as a plumbing situation, I'll show another graphic. If you can think of all of these pipes laid out side by side, you turn the water on and they circulate. The leads circulate through these pipes. This is really where the term pipeline comes from. Well, you can use any CRM to structure this, Sarah, from a cold outreach, they don't know me, I don't know them, to I know who the decision maker might be in this deal, to I know what their budget is, I know when their buying window might be, I know who they've bought from in the past and what they paid. You can really build a lot of intelligence on a good prospect if you take the time to walk them through something that is systemized in a consistent manner. And this works really, really well for your listeners that have longer sales cycles where it's not just a one call close, which I know a lot of them do. Well, if I know I'm probably not going to close this person on this next call, what can I learn from them? What can I share with them today that I know gets me a level deeper or a level closer towards that sale? So that maybe after our third or fourth conversation, I'll have more data gathered, more intelligence to be able to present a solution in a way that is incredibly tailored and personalized to that prospect. Well, if you can do that at a strategic level to set your people up for success, your SDRs, you're doing more than 99% of the others in your with your role or in your industry. Mm-hmm. Really going to help your salespeople get set up for success on those calls.
And where do you think this system lives? Obviously, the pipeline itself is going to exist within the CRM, but the documentation mm-hmm. around the system, where is that?
It could be in the CRM. It also works really well if you want to low tech it. You could put it into Google Sheets. And that could be the thing that then transfers into your CRM. But something that we are adamant about as it applies to systems is don't just create it once and leave it alone. And there's a lot of examples on this where something that worked back in 2019 in the world of sales just does not work today because a lot of us are selling in a hybrid environment or our decision makers are a lot tougher to get on the phone because they're working from home now still. They're managing families, you know, with trying to homeschool kids, or before that just wasn't even an issue. So if we don't modify our systems in our CRMs or in our spreadsheet or wherever that might live where your team has access to it, then it's going to become out of date. It's not going to be as powerful as it would be if you took the time to update it. Well, you can't update it if it doesn't live somewhere. If it's just in your head, you're just, you know, rewriting a script in your own brain. There's a lot of opportunity for the next strong martini to wipe that script out. And I don't want that to happen to any of your listeners. So really recommend that lives in a CRM or that lives inside of a spreadsheet where your team has access to it. And you as a leader, as an account executive, can then go in and say, here are the best practices we've gathered from the team on how to generate that initial conversation, what questions we need to ask, what information we need to learn. And out of that, revisit it every quarter to say, have the questions changed? What are we noticing out there in the world of our prospects that we might need to modify our scripts with or our questions in order to be more relevant to them to actually provide value instead of just giving them a straight interview of questions over the course of your sales call?
Amazing. And you made a point a little bit earlier that the prospect or whatever conversation, something will happen that is outside of your system always. Oh, yeah. So how granular do you get with this system, knowing that you can't actually predict everything?
So you have to learn what is going outside of the system first before you can address it. Because there's 100 things that could happen in a sales call from, just a quick hang up, not interested, buy. That's a possible objection. Or if you're meeting in person, it could go sideways in about 1,000 different ways. So what we have to be able to do is figure out what is going off of script from the system and how do we fix our system? How do we close that loop or add something to it to make sure that we're accounting for that potential outcome again? So there are three questions that I advise every salesperson ask as part of their own debrief after a meeting with a qualified buyer. If it's your job to dial for dollars every day and you're cranking out 200 dials inside of a couple of hours, just do this on the ones that you know are qualified buyers that met that criteria. But maybe you are an SDR and you are lining up those big deals, right? You know this a qualified buyer for a variety of reasons. You know they've got budget. Now it's your job to get that deal to the next stage of the sales cycle or to hand it off to your account executive. Well, great process to go through after a quality call, however you define that, is to first ask as a salesperson, what should I have known going into that that I didn't know that I could have done differently? And it might be you didn't overcome an objection, you didn't have a script lined up, you didn't remember all of the discovery questions that you know needed to be asked. Write all that down somewhere and you can share it with your account executive or your leadership team. The second question to ask is about your prospect. And what should I have known about that prospect going into that meeting or that call that I didn't know? We went to school at the same place, 100 years ago. Our kids play soccer on the same team together, whatever that might be that you learned during the call that might be possible for you to find out through some pre-call research next time, especially if it's a high-level qualified buyer that warrants that kind of research time. And the third question, the one that leadership actually needs to hear, even though they're uncomfortable hearing it, is what could my company have done for me as a salesperson to better prepare me for that call? Should I have delivery schedules in front of me that were updated because I couldn't tell that prospect when I could get that service or that product onto their warehouse loading dock because I just didn't know? And that would have really sped up the sale if I could have provided that piece of information. Training, you know, modules, training from great, brilliant people like yourself, Sarah. I mean, all the great things that we know we could be doing as a company, if you can figure out what that might be, just in a suggestion to your leadership team. And if you're the one handing that to them every week to say, I met with Jim Smith, qualified buyer, the sale got shut down though, because I didn't have this. Is there a way that you all could provide that to me or figure out a workaround that, you know, at least gets it in my hands a minute or two after the meeting or an hour or two? Mm-hmm. That'll be the thing that really differentiates you as a salesperson, both to your prospects and to your leadership team. Because no other salesperson has given them that kind of on the ground feedback that would help everybody get better.
Sure. Well, let's dig in more to the salesperson's kind of tactical perspective and how they can start to, I guess, take obviously the support that the strategic level will provide, but start to build up their own kind of top performer systems, share, learn from the other top performers in their org. What should they be doing?
Absolutely. So the first thing I find we have to convince salespeople of first is that they need systems, which is tough for a lot of salespeople because you don't get into the profession of sales because you fit really well into a box. Most salespeople are in the profession because they love to be free floaters. You know, they love to be just on their own schedule. I want to create it. I want to do what I do. It's really the profession that allows the most freedom of anything else in the professional world. So to ask salespeople to use a predictable system, that requires some convincing. So I'm going to try to do that for your listeners now to maybe help get them in the mindset of why systems might be valuable. So we studied probably 500, 600 salespeople across industries and across nations by now at this point, over 8 years of doing these types of research. And what we discovered is that senior salespeople do have systems, even if they don't call them that. And I know this because I can walk into multiple buyer meetings with the same salesperson and I watch them flow through a pretty predictable process, even if they've never written it down. And then I ask, hey, how did you learn that process? And they say, well, it took 20, 30 years to get it done. So that all I can do is just walk in with a blank sheet of paper to a buyer meeting. I know what questions to ask already. I know what objections I'm likely going to hear. I'm already prepared for those. They got the reps in. So that works if you have a whole team of 30, you know, a year veteran salespeople. But for the younger folks, and I know you and I would fit into this crowd, even though we've been selling for a couple of years, how do we get to that 30-year level faster? Well, it takes systems. So I'll show a graphic and explain it to your listeners as well. We discovered that there is an inverse relationship between the amount of attention that you need to perform at any given task and the amount of innovation that you can bring to the table. So I'll give you an example from combat where I was watching this happen every day. If you were a brand new troop, a private is what we call them in the US, and you were right out of boot camp, deployed to whatever war zone they were sending you to at that time, 100% of your focus was likely on, hey, where do I step at what time and where do I point my rifle? Because this is a very dangerous environment. Well, that allows for a very small amount of innovation. And then you take the senior non-commissioned officer, these folks that have been in the field for 20 or 30 years, they're not thinking about where do they need to step next or where does their rifle need to point. All that is muscle memory. And what that allows them to do is react a lot faster to an ever-changing environment. So let's transfer this into the world of sales. That senior salesperson doesn't have a lot of focus on what discovery questions they need to ask or what the next step of the sales process is. They've run through it enough times. It's all muscle memory to them. It's in their head. And that means that they can show up and be present and innovate solutions for whoever they're going to get on the phone with or sit down with next. Whereas that junior salesperson, 100% of their focus is on how do I not dork this up? What are the 9 questions that I need to ask to make my boss happy so that account executive doesn't come back to me and say, why didn't you ask this question? It's the most basic thing that we do here. You need to know this. Well, I don't want to make that mistake. So 100% of my focus is really tactically based instead of how do I open myself up for more innovation? So if you think about 10% of your focus being on the task at hand because you're a senior salesperson, well, that allows you 90% of your attention span now to be in the present and to innovate. Where if it's reversed, you're that junior salesperson, 90% of your attention is on the task at hand, the discovery questions, what you got to say or do next. Only 10% of your attention might be able to really be present with your prospect, listen to what they have to say, and create a custom solution for them, which we're finding more and more, whether you deal with large value items or small value items, you've got to have those custom solutions created at least in your head before you show up, or better yet, in a system. So that's how we convince salespeople that this might be worth investing a little bit of time in. And now you wanted to work into how do you actually build a system, right? Is that the next question?
Yeah, I mean, to continue on from that example, like how do you get the reps in? How do you become that top performer without doing trial and error for 30 years?
Yeah, so I'll give you a basic format for a system. And you can build this whether you have a lot of experience in your field, zero experience, maybe you're that training manager or that account executive and you're sitting over those salespeople, those junior folks. The first thing we noticed about any system is it has to have a trigger to come into effect. So it's a meeting where you finally discover that person is qualified, they're a buyer, they have budget. Boom, maybe that's the trigger. Maybe the trigger is you move someone into a valuable part of your sales process where you know what the buying window is and you happen to be in that buying window right now. Whatever that trigger is, you have to understand when to bring the system into bear. Otherwise, it's going to sit on a shelf forever and never get pulled off and actually used. Once you have that trigger in place, the next thing you got to do is make it repeatable. So simple question to ask, what are the five things I need to do in a certain order to make this particular part of my sales process a success? So if you're discovering whether this is a qualified decision maker or not, maybe the first question is confirming you are the person that buys XYZ product or service within your organization or within your family. Maybe the next question is, when was the last time you purchased something like this? Do you even know what this thing is that I'm trying to sell you? Have you ever used anything like it? Does anyone in your network use anything like it? And you can really line up a couple of great questions like that as part of that five-step process. And at the tail end of it, step back from that repeatable process and look at it, run it through a mock experience, right? Run it through a dry run with one of your peers that might be new as well, but has had enough calls to know what questions to ask. Even better, you can find a senior sales rep, a mentor. Well, that's gold right there to be able to say, I tried to put some thought into what questions need to be asked here. Could you take a look at these and let me know if I'm missing anything? And they'll probably tell you you are. That's why you go to those folks for that kind of advice. And that's a repeatable process now that you have in front of you. The next part of this, and this is the part I mentioned earlier, where you can never just leave these things for 5 years and hope they'll work the same. So you have to make it improvable. So after you test it a time or two, take a look at it and say, instead of just doing this 100 times and hoping for different results, how could I modify it just slightly to get a better result? Well, I've noticed that the last two people I asked this question of didn't respond favorably to it because I was asking for too much too fast. You know, I was kind of asking them to marry me on the first date. That doesn't really work out too well. I know, I've tried. So you really want to take a step back and be like, all right, how do I soften that question up? Or who can I ask a better way to ask that question of these prospects I'm reaching out to? And the final piece of any system, and this is the piece that account executives really love, is to measure it. How can I measure the success or the effectiveness of this system? What am I driving to? Am I trying to get people sold on the first call a lot faster with a higher conversion rate? Or am I just trying to improve my conversion to a deeper part of my own pipeline where I know that these folks are going to be ready to buy in a month and a half? I've got my next task in my CRM. I've got a follow-up email rigged up for them, ready to go right now. If you can do those things inside of a predictable system, well, now you can lift yourself out of having to remember what's supposed to come next. Let the system handle that, and you can be more fully present with your prospects. So happy to talk about this more, Sarah, and work out. If you can give me an example, we can build a system on air. This is what I do for a living. I love it. Or if you want to find out how it might work for different people in different industries, I'll let you guide the conversation.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think let's build a system on air. I'm trying to think of a good example of the company that we can build it for. Let's build it for a company who has the SDRs and the AEs separate. We'll say target won't make a huge difference, but targeting financial services, so complex sale, a lot of buyers, all that kind of stuff, big enterprise sale. They've got to get it to a kind of advanced qualification before they hand that off to the AE, and we'll say we're building the system for both the SDR and AE. Where do you think you start right up the top for that SDR once they get handed that target account, say?
So I always start off with an objective, right? With any system, what is this thing supposed to accomplish? So am I supposed to use this system to gather an intelligence profile on this prospect to hand it off to the AE? Walk me through a little bit about what this is supposed to do.
Yeah, so I would say it's about engaging that prospect, making that contact, yes, and then qualifying them and equipping the AE with all the information they need on the potential project, use case, all of that stuff so that they can, accept, qualified, pass it off to the AE.
All right. And it sounds like you have some experience in this field. Am I wrong in assuming that?
Yeah, I'm thinking of actually a client that we work with.
I'll bet you are.
the thing that came to mind. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So you're going to build it with me, right? It's not just going to be me teaching here. I'm going to get your insight and we're going to crystallize it. So the trigger in this system, what is the event that happens that would bring it into play? Is it before this sales rep gets a hold of a prospect name, a phone number, an email address? Is it during the call? What is the time when you find most of these folks would really benefit from having a system in place before they just botch it entirely when they're on the phone or in person?
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think it is before they even necessarily know who the actual economic buyer is within that account, mm-hmm. who the decision makers are. It's here's your account. It's RBC. Go for it. Your Love trigger it. Is okay. just getting that account in your lap. Yeah.
Awesome. So the trigger is getting the account name. All right. Now I know when to start. And there might be roles for the account executive and taking a look at that account and figuring out, you know, based on what I know about the industry, are these folks worth pursuing? They're a 1,000-person company. That's a great fit. Or it's a mom and pop accounting service, but they call themselves, you know, a big company incorporated, right? Just we know not a good fit from our experience. All right. So people might have different roles in that, but now the trigger event has happened. I'm an SDR. I've got this account name on my desk. It's been approved by my account executive. What do I do next? Well, here's where the repeatable part comes in. What are the things that I need to do in what order to make sure that I get the information needed to pump this thing back up to my account executive with a nice pretty bow on top of it and say, this is a sale that's ready to happen? What are the things in this client's world that would need to occur on that first call?
Mm-hmm. So once the SDR actually has a conversation with somebody at that account, it needs to be somebody who has decision-making authority. There are different use cases, so there's not kind of one and only one decision maker you could engage with. But once you've got a kind of economic buyer, once you've identified what the potential project could be or use case could be within that company, and then identifying those kind of bank criteria, so timelines, budget, any of that kind of knowledge is very important before, the AE is like, bows on that and I'll take it.
Love it. So we have to know who the decision maker is, qualify them as a buyer, and that could be 100 different job titles depending on the organization. I totally get that. I'm very familiar with that. And then all the things that we need to ask along the way. Now, the repeatable part of this, you could drill down really tactically into what's the best way to ask who the decision maker is. It could be as blunt as, hey, who really is the buyer for XYZ product or service? And that might get you places inside some organizations, and others would be like, well, that's just not how we do business here, right? You got to go through the committee, or you got to mm-hmm. go through the procurement office, right? All the places that we don't want to be as salespeople. So mm-hmm. you could get really tactical in how you ask those questions. But the important thing that you and I figured out is here are the questions that need to be asked. And then we can drill down further with our sales reps, with our experienced folks on the best ways to ask those questions. But once I have all of those questions answered, what's the next step that needs to happen in order to ensure a smooth handoff to the next person that needs to handle it, whether that's the account executive or an appointment setter? In this client's case, what happens after that phone call ends?
Yeah, it would be a meeting with all parties involved. So setting up a meeting with the AE, a sales kind of specialist in whatever field this ends up being in or what department it'll, you know, use case, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that there's a kind of group call, and then it can always move forward from there.
So their job then, this account rep's job, is to schedule a group appointment, mm-hmm. To line up calendars, which means they're going to need access to everybody's calendar on their end to not have to say, well, let me check with the 5 people on my end and get back to you in 2 weeks, because now you've already lost the conversation. But to be able to say, you know, we have these times blocked on Tuesday at 3:30 or Wednesday at 4, which of those works better for you on what week, Mr. and Ms. Prospect? And now you're in a conversation where they can look at their calendars more easily. So that's the next step, to have all that set. Once that happens, what needs to happen after you hang up the phone? Or what have you seen as a really good practice? So I've set my appointment, calendar invites have pumped out. Is that the last time this person should hear from me before the meeting?
No, definitely an introduction to people that they don't know yet who are joining that group call, and anything that could be helpful ahead of that call, like, I don't know, case studies, white papers, anything like that.
Yep, I love it. So to have all of those resources teed up and ready to go, so you don't have to create them for the first time on the spot. Brilliant. Yep. So now we've got a couple of steps in place after the trigger. Now the next piece of this, we're going to test it for a while, but I want to improve it. What are the things that I should be asking about or looking for if we've run this across, let's say, 200 calls in the course of a couple of months?
Should be looking at the kind of conversion rate, I guess, from you booking that meeting to people showing up on that group meeting, and same thing from that group meeting onto the next step, and seeing where bottlenecks might be there and what might have caused drop off would be kind of the top thing I think of.
Yep. And so if I wanted to improve the way that I was doing it, am I looking at script questions? Am I looking at pipeline movement? You mentioned a lot of conversion tracking, which is great. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. But I want to know, what are the things that I should be asking my sales reps, maybe, or my account executives that would reveal problems along the way? For the account reps, is this system easy to use? Where are you storing it? Is it just in a written checklist in front of you next to your phone and your computer? Is it written on a whiteboard above your desk? Is it something that our CRM triggers for you, so it's already pre-programmed inside of every account note? What are best practices and the ones that have really found a good way to make this happen? And I'll bet you you'll find some things that would be easy to replicate. For some teams and companies, it's going to be a sheet of paper. For other teams and companies, because they're more tech savvy, it's going to be something programmed in their CRM that they just click a button and boom, that screen pops up and it's all ready to go. Checklist, checklist, boom, 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 done. So there's a lot of different ways we could ask about how do we improve based on who's used it, who's seen success, and who's struggling. Now, the final bit, and this is the conversion piece that you measured, because we have to measure the effectiveness of this system. So if I was looking for maybe one or two things to measure to know, hey, is this better than the way we were doing it before? What are those things that I should be looking at?
Definitely, yeah. Conversion rate, as I mentioned, kind of the time that it takes for that to happen, if there's any delay. I guess even just having that AE kind of looking back and saying like, yes, I had everything that I needed in order to push that forward.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Or I had to go back and...
That's actually part of that improvement piece, right? Because we're not just dealing with the account rep checking a box and then sending it on into the ether, never to be seen again. If it's not a smooth handoff or that AE is missing something consistently, that'd be the time to bring that back, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. Like I noticed that I only have the first initial and last name of everybody that you make me an appointment with, because that's the way the calendar produces it. I want to address these people by their first name, but you could spell Sarah like 9 different ways. Don't even get me started on Sean. So I don't want to mess that up in my communications, right? So we have to fix just that small thing. That could make a massive difference in sales down the road. So what you and I have just built now, Sarah, is we have a trigger for this event. We've got a repeatable process that could really be built out into a really solid system. We've got ways to improve it, questions to ask both our account reps and our account executives, our SDRs and our account executives. And of course, how do we measure this? How do we make it better? Make sure that it's actually a system that works just a lot better than, hey, you know, we're all just going to try to make this happen as quickly as we can and hope for the best. We're going to shoot arrows in the dark and hope they land on target. What you and I have just created is something that's a lot more akin to knowing what the target is, having everything we need to hit it dead on the bullseye, and then making sure that we're doing it consistently day over day, month over month.
Amazing. Well, I think that's a perfect place to wrap it up. We've kind of talked about the importance of this strategic side, the tactical side, and built an example of what one of these little systems would look like for a specific type of company. If people want to learn more from you, Sean, if they want to get in touch with you, where can they do that?
Absolutely. Over at bulletproof-selling.com, because we realized a lot of salespeople come to us with a lot of different issues. We set up a 5-minute sales assessment. It's absolutely free. You tell us what you want us to build a system around. And just like Sarah and I just did on air, I will send you a system on whatever you specifically tell me you need a sales system built around, so you can get started right away.
That's great. And tell me about the most recent book and where people can find that and read that.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, it's called Bulletproof Selling. It is systemizing sales for the battlefield of business. It walks through about a dozen different sales systems, from how do you stand up a pipeline like we talked about, all the way down to how do you, after the sale, generate predictable referrals. So if you're interested in that, it is available on hardback, Kindle, and audiobook at amazon.com.
Awesome. Well, it was an absolute pleasure having you, Sean, on the show. Amazing to take your experience in the tactical, you know, real world battlefield side of things and bring it over into the battlefield of sales. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
And thank you to all of you for joining us again for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. If you haven't already, please do hit that subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests like Sean Rhodes joining us. We will catch you again next time.